email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, this is go.ie is an online personalised resource for women and their loved ones who have been impacted by gynaecological cancer. The site is part of the Irish Cancer Society's Women's Health Initiative, the aim of which is to improve health and well-being for women impacted by cancer who are dealing with the side effects and consequences of treatment. The site has been up and running now for almost a month, and two of the people involved in its creation are with me in studio, Professor Donal Brennan, Professor of Gynaecological Oncology at UCD. How are you doing, Donal? Thanks for coming in. And Yvonne O'Mara, Women's Cancer Survivorship Research Coordinator, Social Worker and Psychotherapist. How are you, Yvonne? I'll go to you first, Yvonne, to tell us how it all came about.
Thanks, Ray, and good afternoon to all your listeners. So the idea isn't a particularly difficult one, but it's one that wasn't in situ this time last year. Knowing and having worked with patients for a number of years, anyone in healthcare will know that patients Google all the time. And unfortunately, they go down avenues and end up in inaccurate information sites. They end up in South America, they end up in the Americas, they end up in the Southern Hemisphere on websites that we don't know are accurate. And this is Go platform is information that is accurate and pertinent to an Irish audience led by Irish women. And I think that's what makes it so unique.
Okay. And before you put it together, you asked the people who would use a site like this, what did they want from a site?
Yes, an opportunity arose within the Women's Health Initiative early on in its foundations this time last year, whether we would go down paper or whether we would go online. And for the reasons that I've just mentioned, we know that most people Google and search. And so what we did is we put a call out to the Irish Society of Gynaecological Oncology's Patient and Public Involvement Group, asking women who've been impacted by cervical cancer to form a group, of which the team and I would have led many workshops around whether this was a concept or an idea that would be helpful. Did the women think it would be helpful? And if it was helpful, what would be the type of information that should go in it? And that's we've just taken it from there.
Okay. And Donal, you have these conversations every day, or definitely every week, so they're routine to you. But for the person who's coming into you, this is turning their world upside down, isn't it?
Absolutely, Ray. And I think that sometimes when you've been in clinical medicine for a while, you maybe become a little bit immune to that idea. And what we take as routine is obviously a very special, a very important day for the women who are coming into us. Remember, when a lady is diagnosed with cervical cancer, she may well have been given that diagnosis a few weeks prior to actually coming to see us in the cancer centre. And there is a lag period where scans have to be done, these famous MDT meetings have to happen. And there is that period where people will, without doubt, look for more information. And one of the kind of eye-opening things about this was the simple things that patients told us that we could do that we hadn't thought of ourselves. And one of the kind of clear and most, I suppose, important parts of the website that I think are, you know, the list of questions that patients would ask if they had a second chance to go through the process, and the list of questions that they didn't ask that they felt they should have asked. And the other thing that I think is quite interesting is they asked us to explain why we ask the questions we ask.
Okay.
Because sometimes people can be asked quite serious questions during these consultations, and they may be sometimes upsetting, and they may not understand why we're asking those questions. They're the sort of insights that patients give you that you wouldn't ever get unless you actually bring them into the forum at the start.
So what sort of questions do they want to ask?
Well, a lot of the time they're very simple questions, because ultimately we only take in a very small amount of any interaction we have with professionals. So when you go into a doctor...
That's interesting in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, like, you know, even if the consultation goes on for half an hour, I'm sure most people will only take in 10 or 15% of what's actually been said. They want very simple things. Where has my cancer come from? What is the histological diagnosis? What grade is it? What stage is it? And oftentimes, they actually don't bring those questions back to their loved ones, or those answers back to their loved ones. Because what happens is these people are under a lot of pressure, because they've built up this consultation to come to the cancer centre. And they have lots of brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, grannies ringing them up saying, well, what did the doctor say? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the patient doesn't remember because they've been given so much information. They've actually been given too much information in that period of time. So we found that really insightful. And Yvonne will talk to you about some of the simple things that the patients advised to us about how that we would improve that communication.
Thanks, Donal. Yeah, so what we found is in one of the first workshops, one of the PPI relayed to us that...
What's PPI?
Sorry, yeah. My apologies. Yeah. Patient and public involvement.
Yeah, so just...
Absolutely.
And you see, even acronyms, I think...
No, absolutely. And I can't believe I said that, Ray, so I apologise. Yes. Yeah, because I am you, yeah, so yeah. I apologise. Yes, so women that were impacted by cervical cancer, and also we looked outside women that were impacted by cervical cancer. We took a broad spectrum and we held a very large online closed group getting more information as to what these women would need, so breast cancer. But what we found in one of the groups that we facilitated was that one of the women, she actually had received a drawing from the surgeon, the gynaecologist, who was going to be performing the surgery. And this lady had cervical cancer and she got the opportunity to take this drawing home. Right. And what we found is that those surgeons that can draw, and there are many who are excellent, they draw, but the drawing
explain,
is left.
To
yes,
explain.
But yes. It's left on the chart. Uh-huh. And so what we came up with was what you have in front of you there is that now all women in the UCD sites for now are going to get a copy of this diagram to take home with them, explaining exactly where the cancer is, and also a visual aid, because not all of us are into writing and reading. So,
and those things that Donal mentioned, they get a card with that listed out on it as
yes,
well.
Yes, so that's in front of you there. Okay. So all the stage, the grade, and hopefully this is a project courtesy of the Irish Cancer Society. This is something that I hope that will not be just accessible to women in Dublin.
Donal, you've been a man. Well, that's I don't know how to frame the question, but you know what the question is. Is it more difficult for a woman to sit in front of a man and talk about these things?
And I think that brings in there's a couple of very important things around that, Ray. There's no doubt that women find it more difficult to speak to male consultants about certain personal issues. And that's why we are so lucky within Gynae Cancers to have this amazing group of clinical nurse specialists who are really our right-hand people who sit beside us and, you know, will really become very intimately involved with the patient journey, sometimes much more so than the consultant. And we couldn't do our job without those amazing women in general. But there's also... It maybe brings up another narrative that we don't talk about enough in Ireland, that once your cancer is treated, that you need to get on with your life.
Yes.
And whether you're a man or a woman, people find it difficult to actually complain about the fact that they might have long-term side effects of cancer treatment, because in some way they should be thankful that their cancer is no longer there. And this is where really This Is Go is important, because there are thousands of women living well after cervical cancer, but a huge proportion of them have very significant long-term side effects, and the services and supports around those are very poor.
Okay.
And also...
And probably one of the main ones for a lot of people is sex.
Sexual dysfunction, yes. Menopause, bowel dysfunction, body image issues.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of this came from, you know, patients, not just cervical cancer patients, breast cancer patients, ovarian cancer patients, all coming back with the same themes, that they find it very difficult to actually discuss these matters with anybody, even with their partner.
And interesting statistics, and I'm sort of reluctant to talk about statistics, but when people come in, they're unlikely to bring up what happens afterwards with their sex life.
Yes, Ray. So what we know is that unless it's instigated by a physician, the topic of sexual dysfunction, and we know, and again, back to statistics, but over 90% of women will suffer from a chronic sexual dysfunction post-gynecological cancer, an acute, and then over 50% will go on to have a chronic dysfunction. It can range from vaginal dryness to the more complex, to painful sex or not having sex at all. And there can be massive unspoken changes within the relationship that often don't get unearthed or never spoken about because people are too shy.
So is there no counselling after it?
It's a great question. There is lots of counselling that is available, but psychosexual counselling is quite an area of expertise and not many counsellors are
in wonder
a position.
Why in this country. I wonder why that's the case.
Yeah, but the service directory actually directs people to counsellors who are able to address these issues. Okay. And so again, under This Is Go, we talk about it. There's solutions. Lack of desire is a very simple one, but if you've lack of desire in your relationship is going to take its toll. And and how you had sex in your 20s isn't how you have sex in your 40s. And if you've had a pre-existing sexual issue prior to a cancer, cancer's not going to improve it.
No.
So what we know is that all cancers leave their mark, but for some of them, they're visible, and others, they're invisible. And often psychosexual wellness is an invisible mark that often doesn't get spoken about.
Okay. So, Donal, cervical cancer has been talked about an awful lot in this country over the last, is it 3 years now? It's 3 years, isn't it? 2 or 3 years, for all the wrong reasons. But the other thing that's sort of parallel with that is that the world has got smaller. The medical world has got smaller. So, as you, one of you alluded to earlier on, in that gap between the not knowing and the knowing, you Google. And you find yourself in Mexico or South America and somebody offering a treatment that's revolutionary and miraculous and all that sort of thing. And you think, you know, far away hills are green. And that's happening. And we all know of people who've raised funds and gone to Mexico or America, or whatever, for a treatment that may not stand up to scientific rigor.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a multifaceted issue. You know, I did a primetime investigates program on this a couple of years ago, highlighting those exact issues. There's no doubt that misinformation is a huge problem in this age of 24-hour news cycle. And unfortunately, as we all know, there aren't a lot of miracle cures around, but it's very easy to sell these when you're not held to any significant standards. And that is always our worry. I feel that this is GO will allow us to really empower women to make those decisions in a much more, in a safe environment. And this is GO was really this, what we would call an online safe place for accurate, reliable information. And that, you might think, is a very simple point, but it's actually the key to the whole thing. Because the other thing that we kind of forget about is that there's a stigma attached to cervical cancer in particular, that in some way, whether you like it or not, women feel that they have in some way contributed to them getting cervical cancer because they have because of the link with HPV, and they experience that, as Yvonne says, in both very visible ways, but also in invisible ways. So they often find it very difficult to talk within their communities about their. They feel very lonely. They feel desperate, and as a result, they're kind of pushed into these areas that maybe are very dangerous in some situations, as you said. Ultimately, you know, if we can empower people with knowledge, particularly women with knowledge, they'll make more informed decisions. Mm. And that's what this is really about.
Of course, these companies or clinics or whatever they call themselves in other countries are preying on very vulnerable women who are just looking for some sort of hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's always much more difficult to offer hope than reality. And, you know, sitting down, spending half an hour, 45 minutes with a family explaining that, you know, we are running out of treatment options here is a much more difficult conversation to have than to sit down and say, well, let's try something else new. And we've do that on a weekly basis, Ray. There are families decimated by cervical cancer. I suppose on the other side, there's good news in that there's vaccination, the screening program and things like that. You know, we have an opportunity, particularly in the developed world, to eradicate cervical cancer. But remember, there are still 500,000 new cases worldwide, 250,000 deaths, most of them in lower middle income class countries, which, you know, are ravaging families and societies. Ultimately, you know, if we can develop these sort of empowered women to speak out, because if we hadn't had these forums where these women felt safe to tell us what it was like, we wouldn't have This Is GO.
Okay. We've talked about maybe the charlatans and the quacks, but let's be honest, we're a small country, so resources are tight. So when it comes to cutting-edge treatment, stuff that's been tried and tested, we don't have it available to us here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And people look abroad and they go onto a website and of a reputable, you know, clinic, yes, and they see that there's something else out there.
And I think that really what that's about is clinical trials, because ultimately the Irish infrastructure and clinical trials has been, you know, because of our size, it's been difficult to allow us to open these cutting edge clinical trials. Interestingly, only 2 weeks ago, the famous pembrolizumab was officially endorsed as what we would now consider first line treatment.
Why did it take so long?
Because
Vicky Phelan have to go and fight for it?
Because
and then the people had to go on prime time and fight for it.
But ultimately, we're one of the only countries that has pembrolizumab available to us at the moment, because it is literally the trial has only been published because you have to do these studies.
Okay.
So the last big study was only published in September to prove that it was better than the yeah, standard
so
chemotherapy.
It was been used for other types of cancer, exactly, but wasn't yeah. available for
and unless we
cancer.
Do, and there are plenty of examples. For example, I work in ovarian cancer where pembrolizumab has failed utterly to show right. any survival benefit.
Okay.
So you have to be a little bit careful.
Okay, yeah,
do,
no, fair
but
enough.
But coming back to Vicky Phelan's story, and Vicky Phelan's a very important person in all this, and to be honest with you, you know, Vicky and all the other ladies involved in the 221 Plus group, they were the reason that we were able to leverage the Irish Cancer Society to talk about not cervical cancer diagnosis, but surviving and living mm-hmm. with cervical cancer after the treatment. Vicky is a good example of somebody who had to go away to get on a clinical trial. And ultimately, thanks to her work, and she has put some of her own money into this, we are now opening more and more clinical trials in Ireland, particularly in cervical cancer. We need to open more, but they're very difficult to open. And then there's lots of logistical issues. But then what happens is they're so sought after that they close quite quickly again.
Yes.
And being a small country, it can be difficult to convince the people who run these trials to open them here because they need the numbers in.
Yeah, but surely the history of how we've treated women with cervical cancer might be a sort of give you some leverage.
Yes, and you know, and to be fair, my colleague Dr. Dervla Collins in Cork is about to open 3 or 4 new cervical cancer okay. trials as part of the European network. So we are moving there. There's a big trial which is just open combining pembrolizumab with radiotherapy in Cork. We're hoping to open one in Dublin, the same okay. in Dublin. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. We need more access to clinical trials for people who fail what we would call first-line therapy.
Just while I have you, just on a big picture thing about the future and cancer treatment, are we moving forward quickly or slowly?
So I think there's two things about cancer that we need to be careful about. The first is that we've made huge steps forward about understanding the biology of cancer, and we've spent a lot of money on this worldwide. But not when we figure out what happens in the lab, it hasn't always translated into what happens in the clinic. And but I think the best example I have about cancer is to switch into a different field and think of HIV, where we've turned HIV into a chronic illness. So you remember in the 80s, people dying all over the place.
Killer, yeah.
It was a killer. And now there are people living all over the world with HIV.
One pill a day.
One pill a day. And what we've learned is we need to turn cancer into a chronic disease. There are lots of people who present with advanced stage cancer, particularly breast cancer now and ovarian cancer, who will live much, much longer with their disease than they would have 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But they will always have cancer, Ray. And that's why we need to get away from this great Irish phenomenon called the all clear.
Yes.
And most of them will be on treatment, but they will live much longer lives. So, yes, we're making slow incremental progress. We still have a long way to go. We need to improve our diagnostics. We're going to run into a big problem post-COVID with a lot of advanced stage presentations because people will have missed out on diagnostics or we're almost afraid to come to the doctor. So I think we're in for a tough couple of years because of what's happened with COVID.
And we all know that if you get it early, better chances of good results.
So yeah, and that's why this is GO is important because it's not just for people who have cancer. There's a whole section about
symptoms
yeah. and about, you know, if you're worried but don't have it. And the other part that's in it that's important is there's a whole section for partners, because one of the things that we didn't come into about sexual dysfunction is there's no point in talking to one person in a relationship yes. about sexual dysfunction unless you talk to the two people in the relationship. Mm. You're probably not going to address sexual dysfunction.
Now, it's specifically about cervical cancer now, Yvonne, but it's going to expand over the coming years. Is that correct?
That's the vision.
Yeah.
So the next project is going to address ovarian cancer. And there's obviously 5 gynecological oncology cancers. But this is a springboard for all cancers, Ray. I hope that somebody will take this on and go, let's run with this. Because not only for cancers, but for the likes of M&D, it's a motor neurons.
Yes.
It's applicable to so many that people can go to a safe one-stop shop, information that's accurate, decoding the science that's out there, finding clinical pathways, talking to children about cancer, talking to children about illness in general. It's not rocket science, but it's a lovely umbrella over it. And that's
interesting you brought that up, because one of the most important things for people who are diagnosed is, how do I tell my children?
Yes.
Isn't that interesting that was sort of up there, the top 2 things?
I'm so passionate about that. I have little people in my world. Ray, cancer has come into our world. Illness for the vast majority of families will come in at some stage. And what we know is that for the vast majority of individuals who are diagnosed with a cancer, there is a little person in their world. So whether it's a grandmother, that they've grandchildren or not, and often they get unspoken about. There's really, really excellent information on this in This Is GO, and books to support children, and also you have a social worker in most centres of excellence around the country that will help and guide you around this as well. And I might just say, Ray, that This Is Go has been a community. I have been blown away by the selflessness of healthcare professionals working during a pandemic, during the cyber attack, that have given their time and energy for no money to populate and help for the greater good of people. I cannot express my thanks enough.
We say thanks to them. Thisisgo.ie, thisisgo.ie. Professor Donal Brennan, thank you. And Yvonne Amara, thank you very much. Thank you.
Pleasure.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.